This is Audible.
HighBridge Audio presents The Introvert Advantage, How to Thrive in an Extrovert World by Marty Olson Laney, Doctor of Psychology. Read by Tamara Marston. Original material copyright 2002 by Marty Olson Laney. Recorded by arrangement with Workman Publishing Company Incorporated. Recording copyright 2013, HighBridge Company. Prelude. It is the chiefest point of happiness that a man is willing to be what he is. Erasmus. Growing up, I was often puzzled about myself. I was full of confusing contradictions, an odd duck. I did so poorly in first and second grade that my teachers wanted me to repeat, yet in third grade I did very well. Sometimes I was very animated and talkative, making crisp, informed comments. In fact, if it was a subject I knew about, I could talk someone's arm and leg off. Other times I wanted to speak, but my mind was blank. Or I would think of something to say in class, raise my hand, thrilled that I might improve the 25% of my grade that was based on class participation. But when I was called on, my comment would disappear into thin air. My internal screen would go dark. I wanted to crawl under my desk. Then there were the times when my remarks would come out in some halting, unclear form, making me sound much less knowledgeable than I was. I developed all sorts of techniques for avoiding the teacher's eyes when she was scanning the class for someone to answer a question. I couldn't rely on myself. I never knew how I would react. Confusing me further was that when I did express myself out loud, people often told me I was well-spoken and concise. Other times, my classmates treated me as if I were mentally disabled. I didn't think I was stupid, but I didn't think I was sharp as a tack either. The way my brain worked puzzled me. I couldn't figure out why I could think of lots of comments after the fact. When I gave my opinion about something that had happened earlier, teachers and friends would ask, in an irritated tone, why I hadn't spoken up before. They seemed to think I was purposely withholding my thoughts and feelings. I found my thoughts were like lost airline baggage. They arrived some time later. As I grew up, I began to think of myself as a stealth person, running silent, deep, and invisible. Many times I would say something and no one would respond. Later, another person might say the same thing, and he or she would be acknowledged. I would think there was something wrong with the way I spoke. At other times, when people heard me speak or read something I wrote, they would look at me with a stunned expression. It happened so many times that the look had become very familiar to me. It seemed to say, "You wrote this?" I felt mixed about this reaction because I liked being acknowledged, but I also felt overwhelmed by the attention. Socializing was also a confusing experience. I enjoyed people, and people seemed to like me, but I often dreaded going out. I would go back and forth deciding whether to show up at a party or public event. I concluded I was a social chicken. Sometimes I felt awkward and uncomfortable. At other times, I felt okay. Even when I was having a wonderful time, I was eyeing the door and fantasizing about snuggling in bed in my pajamas. Another source of pain and frustration was my low energy. I got fatigued easily. I didn't seem to have the same stamina as my friends and family. When I was tired, I walked slowly, ate slowly, and talked slowly, with lots of agonizing gaps in my conversation. On the other hand, if I was rested, I could chat so fast, jumping from thought to thought, that the people I was with may have felt blitzed. In fact, some people thought I had a lot of energy. Trust me, I didn't, and still don't. Yet, even with my slow pace, I trudged along until I ended up accomplishing most of what I wanted with my life. It took me years to discover that all of my puzzling contradictions actually made sense. I was a normal introvert. This discovery brought me such relief. Overture. Democracy cannot survive without the guidance of a creative minority. Harlan F. Stone. Remember when we were kids and compared belly buttons? Back then, it was considered better to be an innie than an outie. Nobody wanted a belly button that stuck out, so I was glad mine went in. Later, when innie came to mean introvert in my mind, and outie came to mean extrovert, it was the opposite. Extrovert was good. Introvert was bad. Since no matter how hard I tried, I didn't have those extroverted qualities. I thought something was wrong with me. I didn't understand many things about myself. Why did I feel overwhelmed in environments that thrilled other people? Why did I come away from outside activities feeling as if I were gasping for air? Why did I feel like a fish out of water? Why are outies the cultural ideal? Our culture values and rewards the qualities of extroverts. America was built on rugged individualism and the importance of citizens speaking their minds. We value action, speed, competition, and drive. It's no wonder people are defensive about introversion. We live in a culture that has a negative attitude about reflection and solitude. Getting out there and just doing it are the ideals. In his book, The Pursuit of Happiness, social psychologist Dr. David Myers claimed that happiness is a matter of possessing three traits: self-esteem, optimism, and extroversion. Dr. Myers based his conclusions on studies that prove extroverts are happier. These studies required participants to agree or disagree with such statements as, "I like to be with others," and "I'm fun to be with." Introverts don't describe happiness in the same way, so they are perceived as unhappy. For them, statements like, "I know myself," or "I'm comfortable in my own skin," or "I am free to pursue my own path," are the benchmarks for a feeling of personal contentment. But they are not asked their reaction to these statements. An extrovert must have developed these studies. When extroversion is taken for granted as the natural outcome of healthy development, introversion can't help but become the dreaded other. Somehow, introverts have failed to achieve appropriate socialization. They are doomed to isolated unhappiness. Otto Kroger and Janet Thiessen are psychological consultants who use the Myers-Briggs type indicator. More on this later. In their book, Type Talk, they discuss the plight of the introvert, saying, "Introverts are outnumbered about 3-1. As a result, they must develop extra coping skills in life, because there will be an inordinate amount of pressure on them to shape up, to act like the rest of the world. The introvert is pressured daily, almost from the moment of awakening, to respond and conform to the outer world." I think the playing field of life needs to be evened out a little. Extroverts get most of the good press. It's time that introverts realize just how unique and special they are. We are ripe for a cultural shift toward the okayness of introversion. It's all right for us to stop trying to fit in and to shape up. We need to appreciate our own shape as it is. This audiobook aims to help us do this. In it, you will learn three basic things. 1. How to determine if you're an introvert. You may be surprised. 2. How to understand and appreciate your introverted advantages. 3. How to nurture your valuable nature with numerous useful tips and tools. Nothing is wrong with me. I'm just introverted. What a lovely surprise to finally discover how unlonely being alone can be. Ellen Burstyn. When I was in my 30s, I made a career change from children's librarian to psychotherapist, two introverted occupations that require social skills, you may note. Although I enjoyed many aspects of being a librarian, I wanted to work on a more personal level with people. Facilitating individual growth and development to help others live more satisfying lives felt like a gratifying life purpose for me. In graduate school, I learned about the phenomena of introversion as a distinct temperament or style for the second time. As part of my coursework, I took a few personality tests, and on several of them, I came out as an introvert. I was surprised. When my professors discussed the results, they explained that introversion and extroversion are on opposite ends of an energy continuum. Where we fall on that continuum predicts how we derive our life energy. People on the more introverted end of the continuum focus inward to gain energy. People on the more extroverted end of the continuum focus outward to gain energy. This fundamental difference in focus can be seen in practically everything we do. My professors emphasized the positive aspects of each temperament and made it clear that each was okay, just different. The concept of different energy requirements clicked with me. I began to understand my need to be alone to recharge my batteries. I didn't feel quite as guilty for wanting breaks from my children. It finally dawned on me that nothing was wrong with me. I was just introverted. As I became informed about the strengths and weaknesses of introverts, I felt less ashamed. When I learned the ratio of extroverts to introverts, 3-1, I realized I lived in a world structured for all those outies. But no wonder I felt like a fish out of water. I was living in a sea of extroverts. I also began to have insights into why I hated the large staff meetings I was required to attend every Wednesday evening at the counseling center where I was an intern. I understood why I rarely spoke in group supervision, and why my mind would often vapor lock whenever I was in a room with more than a few people. Being an introvert in a world geared toward extroverts affects all aspects of a person's life. Psychoanalyst Carl Jung developed theories about introversion and extroversion and thought that we are attracted to our opposite to help strengthen and complete what's missing in each of us. He thought introversion and extroversion were like two chemicals. When they are combined, each can be transformed by the other. He also saw this as a natural, built-in way for us to appreciate complementary qualities in one another. This concept doesn't apply to everyone, but it has certainly proved true in my marriage of 38 years. Initially, my husband, Mike, didn't understand my introversion, and I couldn't comprehend his extroversion. I remember when the two of us went to Las Vegas after we were first married. I staggered through the casino, my brain numbed. Colors danced everywhere, and lights exploded in my eyes. The clanking of winners' coins tumbling into metal catchers pounded in my head. I kept asking Mike, "How much farther is it to the elevator?" They do that tricky thing in Las Vegas, making you walk through a maze of shiny machines, misted in cigarette smoke, to get to the elevator and the quiet oasis of your room. My husband, the extrovert, was ready to rock and roll. His cheeks were rosy and his eyes sparkled. All the noise and action excited him. He didn't understand why I was heading up to the room. I was pea green and felt like a trout I once saw lying on a bed of crushed ice in a fish market. At least the trout got to lie down. Later, when I woke up from my nap, I was surrounded by 200 silver dollars, Mike had won. Obviously, extroverts have many charms. And they are a good balance for us introverted types. They help us go out and about. We help them slow down. Why I wrote this book. Come forth into the light of things. Let nature be your teacher. William Wordsworth. One afternoon, Julia, an introverted client, and I were brainstorming about how she could manage an upcoming training workshop. I am dreading it, she told me. We developed several strategies to help her get through it, and as she got up to leave, she lowered her head and looked at me intently in the eye. She said, I still hate schmoozing, you know. As if she thought I expected her to be a social butterfly. I said, I know, I still hate it myself. We sighed together in a knowing way. As I closed my office door, I thought about my own struggle with introversion. In my mind's eye, I pictured the faces of all the introverted clients I have worked with over the years. I thought about how where a person falls on the introvert-extrovert continuum affects all areas of life. I heard clients blaming themselves for qualities they have that they don't like. I would think, oh, I wish they realized that nothing is wrong with them. They are just introverted. I remembered when I first ventured to say to a client, I think you're introverted. Her eyes widened in surprise. She asked, why do you think that? Then I explained that introversion is a collection of traits that we are born with. It's not about disliking people or even being shy. She looked so relieved. She said, you mean there's a reason I'm like this? It's amazing how many people are introverts and don't even know it. As I discussed my ideas about introversion with other therapists, I was surprised to discover that many didn't really understand the original theory of introversion. They thought of it in terms of pathology, not temperament. When I submitted my dissertation for my psychoanalytic degree on the subject, I was moved to tears by the incredible response I got, and I was excited by the comments I received from many of my colleagues. One said, I am now looking at all of my patients in terms of the introvert-extrovert continuum, and it has really helped me to understand and not pathologize the ones who are more introverted. I realize I've been looking at them through an extroverted lens. I know how powerful it can be when the shame of being introverted is lifted. It's a great relief to stop trying to be who you're not. Once I made this connection, I realized I had to write a book to help people understand introversion. How I wrote the book. Quiet people are often found to have profound insights. The shallow water in a brook or river runs fast. The deep water seems calmer. James Rogers. Many introverts don't feel as if they know enough about a subject until they know almost everything, and that's the way I approached this project. This happens for three reasons. First, introverts can imagine the vastness of any subject. Second, they have had the experience of their brain locking, so in an attempt to avoid that awful blank mind moment, they overprepare by accruing as much information as they can. Third, since they often don't talk about what they are thinking, they receive no feedback to help them gain perspective about how much they already know. Although I had worked with introverts for years and studied introversion in depth, I wanted to know what new research was available about the physiology and genetics of introverted brains. My first step, as a former librarian, was to check the Biomed library at UCLA. When I typed in the subject heading of introversion, I was surprised to find that more than 2,000 journal citations appeared in the fields of personality, temperament, neurophysiology, and genetics. Most of the research had been conducted in European countries, where introversion is more accepted as a form of inborn temperament. In Chapter 3, I'll discuss some of the research findings that explain introversion in terms of genetic and physiological endowment. My second step was to check out the Internet, since I thought lots of innies might hang out there. I found several hundred sites about introversion. Many of the websites were linked to the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, a widely used personality assessment based on four aspects of temperament. The first and most statistically valid of these is the introversion-extroversion continuum. Developed by Isabel Myers and Catherine C. Briggs, and based on Jung's original theories, the main strength of this inventory is that it does not pathologize any personality type. Rather, it looks at innate preferences. Introversion is also included on several sites about giftedness, as there is a correlation between introversion and intelligence. And, in case you're interested, there's a rock band named Introversion. Its performance schedule can be found on the Internet. The library and Internet research were very useful and illuminating, but I learned the most about introversion from my own experiences and those of my clients, and from the people I interviewed for this book. I interviewed more than 50 people from many walks of life, including writers, ministers, therapists, historians, teachers, artists, college students, researchers, and computer professionals. Names and some identifying details have been changed. A number of interviewees had taken the Myers-Briggs inventory, and so they knew they were innies. Even though they were not selected with any specific career criteria in mind, a surprising number were in what Dr. Elaine Aaron calls advisor class positions, people who work independently, who wrestle with decisions, who have had to learn how to put themselves in other people's shoes and communicate with people. These workers are creative, imaginative, intelligent, and thoughtful. They are observers. Their work often impacts many people, and they have the courage and perspective to say unpopular things. In her book, The Highly Sensitive Person, Dr. Aaron states that the other class, the warrior class, are the doers of the world. They need counsel from the advisors, and the advisors need warriors to take action and make things happen. Many theorists feel that that is why only 25% of the population consists of introverted people. Fewer introverts are needed. In many interviews, I heard introverts criticizing themselves for their introverted qualities, especially if they didn't even know they were introverted. They were confused about why they felt disregarded and unseen. Since I know introverts like to have time to think about their experiences, I did follow-up calls several weeks after the interview to see if the person had any further thoughts he or she wanted to add. I was surprised and encouraged to find that after our conversation, many felt much better about who they are. Many of them said, "Just by learning that my brain is different and that I live in a sea of extroverts, I feel calmer about being me." Having proof in the form of scientific research that it's okay to be different was a powerful force that reduced guilt, shame, and other negative views people had developed of themselves. These experiences fueled my motivation to get this book published. I am writing this book primarily for introverts. I want innies to understand that there are valuable reasons behind their sometimes puzzling temperament. I would also like them to know they are not alone. However, there are two valuable reasons for extroverts to read it too. First, they can gain an understanding of those mysterious introverts in their lives. Second, extroverts, especially as they enter midlife, need to balance the physical limitations of aging by enhancing their pause to reflect self. This book can open the door to a whole new way for extroverts to think about introverts and to develop self-reflective aspects of themselves. Read it your way. No furniture is so charming as books. Sydney Smith. Since introverts often feel as if something is wrong with them, they try to figure out the right way to do things. Although we live in an extroverted world, the right way isn't always right for innies. So, read this book cover to cover or dip into it anywhere you like. Learning to break new information into bite-sized pieces is one way to manage feeling overstimulated. By this, I mean a physical and mental feeling of too muchness, of being keyed up like a car with the idle set too high, leaving you unable to take in any more stimuli. I have designed this book in small morsels. You can read it chapter by chapter, or let the book fall open and just read that page. Personally, I like to start books at the end. It's a habit that shocks some of my friends. Use the book any way you feel works best. Remember, it is meant to be a helpmate to you. If the information in a given chapter seems relevant to you, great. If something seems less pertinent, that's okay too. This is a tool for you to understand yourself and any introverts you may know. Play means creating a space for something new to happen. This book, like life, is meant to be played with. Once you understand your own introversion, or the introversion of someone close to you, it is such a relief. So that's all it is. You are not weird or hopeless or alone. There are other introverted fish in the sea. This book will help you learn how to recharge yourself. You can create a plan for tackling everyday life. Maybe not the way extroverts do it, but the way that works for innies. Celebrate your introvert advantage. Points to ponder. 75% of the world is extroverted. Being introverted affects all areas of your life. Nothing is wrong with you. Introverts feel drained and overstimulated. Being introverted is something to be celebrated. Part 1. A Fish Out of Water. I am what I am, Popeye. Chapter 1. What's an innie? Are you one? The exception that proves the rule. Proverb. Introversion is, at its root, a type of temperament. It is not the same as shyness or having a withdrawn personality, and it is not pathological. It is also not something you can change, but you can learn to work with it, not against it. The strongest distinguishing characteristic of introverts is their energy source. Introverts draw energy from their internal world of ideas, emotions, and impressions. They are energy conservers. They can be easily overstimulated by the external world, experiencing the uncomfortable feeling of too much. This can feel like antsiness or torpor. In either case, they need to limit their social experiences so they don't get drained. However, introverts need to balance their alone time with outside time, or they can lose other perspectives and connections. Introverted people who balance their energy have perseverance and the ability to think independently, focus deeply, and work creatively. What are the most obvious characteristics of extroverts? They are energized by the external world, by activities, people, places, and things. They are energy spenders. long periods of hanging out, internal contemplation, or being alone, or with just one other person, understimulate them. However, extroverts need to balance their time doing with intervals of just being, or they can lose themselves in a whirlwind of anxious activities. Extroverts offer much to our society. They express themselves easily, they concentrate on results, and they enjoy crowds and action. Introverts are like a rechargeable battery. They need to stop expending energy and rest in order to recharge. This is what a less stimulating environment provides for introverts. It restores energy. It is their natural niche. Extroverts are like solar panels. For extroverts, being alone or inside is like living under a heavy cloud cover. Solar panels need the sun to recharge. Extroverts need to be out and about to refuel. Like introversion, extroversion is a hardwired temperament. It cannot be changed. You can learn to work with it, not against it. The main differences between innies and outies. Appreciate your uniqueness. Captain Kangaroo. Energy creation is the most salient difference between introverts and extroverts. But there are two other primary differences: their response to stimulation and their approach to knowledge and experience. Extroverts thrive on a variety of stimuli, whereas introverts can find it too much. Similarly, outies generally cast a wide net when it comes to accruing knowledge and experience, whereas innies like a narrower, more in-depth focus. Refueling. Let's talk a little more about energy. As I said earlier, the primary difference between introverts and extroverts is how they recharge their batteries. Extroverts are energized by the outer world. Most extroverts like talking to people, engaging in activities outside of themselves, and working around people, activities, and things. Contrary to most of our perceptions about extroverts, however, they are not necessarily more outgoing or lively than an introvert, but their focus is outside themselves. Extroverts spend energy freely and often have trouble slowing down. They can refresh themselves easily by doing something in the outer world, especially since there is so much to choose from today. Extroverts may experience loneliness and a feeling of being drained when they are not in contact with people or the outside world. They may be the ones who are raring to go after a party, asking, "What shall we do next?" Often, the harder part for them is relaxing and giving their bodies a rest. Introverts, on the other hand, are energized by the internal world, by ideas, impressions, and emotions. Counter to our stereotypes of introverts, they are not necessarily quiet or withdrawn, but their focus is inside their heads. They need a quiet, reflective place where they can think things through and recharge themselves. "Phew! It was great to catch up with Bill, but I am so glad the party is over," they say with relief. Creating energy isn't so easy for introverts, especially in today's fast-paced world. It takes more time for introverts to restore energy, and it flows out faster than an extrovert's energy. Introverts need to calculate how much energy something will take, how much they need to conserve, and plan accordingly. For example, the day before she goes out for a hectic day of driving from sales call to sales call in Los Angeles, my client Sandra, a saleswoman who works from home, sets aside a quiet day doing paperwork with few outside interruptions. She goes to bed early and eats a good breakfast before she hits the road. Throughout the day, she schedules breaks where she can be alone and revive herself. In this way, she plans for her energy needs so she won't be depleted. Stimulation, friend or foe? The second difference between the introvert and the extrovert is how they experience external stimulation. Extroverts like to experience a lot, and introverts like to know a lot about what they experience. For introverts who have a high level of internal activity, anything coming from the outside raises their intensity level index quickly. It's kind of like being tickled. The sensation goes from feeling good and fun to too much and uncomfortable in a split second. Introverts, often without realizing why, attempt to regulate experiences of overstimulation through limiting external input. My client Catherine wants to plant a garden in her backyard. She is a teacher, and her job requires most of her focus and energy. New to gardening, she sits down to read the basic book of weekend gardening. As she reads, the scope of the project slowly dawns on her. She will need to learn about shade plants, soil pH, mulching, watering, insect control, and sun exposure. She foresees the complexity and energy requirement involved in going to the nursery and picking out plants in the glaring sun. So many choices to sort through. She thinks of the time it will take to prepare the soil, plant the plants, weed the space, massacre insects, chase away snails, and water every day. Her feeling of enjoyment is receding. There's so much to know, so much to do, that she begins to feel as if it will be too much. Her head is whirling, and she feels overwhelmed. She decides she will limit her garden to a smaller piece of her yard. Introverts enjoy complexity when they can focus on one or two areas without pressure. But if they have too many projects, they easily feel overwhelmed. In later chapters, I will discuss ways to manage the experience of overstimulation. Just being around people can be overstimulating to introverts. Their energy is drained in crowds, classes, or any noisy and invasive environment. They may like people very much, but after talking to anyone, they usually begin to feel the need to move away, take a break, and get some air. This is the reason for the mind vapor lock experience I mentioned earlier. When overstimulated, the introvert's mind can shut down, saying, "No more input, please." It goes dark. Extroverts need breaks too, but for different reasons. If they go to the library, they can spend only a short time in a study mode, an internal process, before they need to take a walk around the stacks, head to the vending machines, or talk with the librarian. They like a lively environment where the action is. Extroverts itch for refueling the more they feel understimulated inside. But just as breaks can increase extrovert stimulation, breaks can decrease introvert stimulation. When innies are studying, for example, they may be taking in so much information that it becomes overwhelming, as was the case with Catherine planning her garden. How deep is the ocean? How wide is the sky? The third way extroverts and introverts are different involves the concept of breadth and depth. By and large, extroverts like breadth, lots of friends and experiences, knowing a little bit about everything, being a generalist. What they take in from the outside environment does not generally expand internally as they process the experience. They are on to the next experience. As an outie friend told me, "I love to flit around a party and just catch the highlights from each conversation." She doesn't like to miss out on anything. For extroverts, life is about collecting experiences. Extroverts view the world as an extensive Sunday brunch. They can graze at the banquet and fill up on all sorts of tasty treats, leaving when they are full to bursting. They want to wring every drop of stimulation they can from life. Variety is stimulating and energizing. Introverts like depth and will limit their experiences, but feel each of them deeply. Often, they have fewer friends but more intimacy. They like to delve deeply into topics and look for richness more than muchness. This is why it's necessary to limit their topics to one or two, or they can become overwhelmed. Their mind absorbs information from the outside environment and then reflects on it and expands it. And long after they have taken in the information, they are still munching and crunching it, a little like cows chewing their cud. How would anyone other than an introvert have had the patience to study the mating patterns of the South African tsetse fly? This is also why introverts resent being interrupted, as I will discuss later. It's difficult to pull themselves up and out of their deep well of concentration, and regaining that concentration takes a lot of extra energy that they often don't have. Different strokes for different folks. A good example of these differences between introverts and extroverts is how my husband Mike and I decide on our vacations. As I've mentioned, Mike is an extrovert and I am an introvert. We don't agree on what constitutes a fun, satisfying vacation at all. Our favorite ways to holiday are so opposite, we take turns choosing our destination. 1 year I pick, the next year he picks. The year after Mike picked a 9 countries in 9 days vacation, I picked a vacation in which we did nothing but explore the historic mining area of Leadville, Colorado. Sitting by the fire at the hotel the first afternoon, we read the Chamber of Commerce's 1-page flyer, What to See in Leadville. My stomach was tingling with excitement. Mike had dozed off. Ever since I saw the movie The Unsinkable Molly Brown, I have wanted to see where Horace Tabor discovered silver. Leadville has the Tabor Opera House, the Heritage Museum, the National Mining Hall of Fame, and the Matchless Mine Museum, not to mention the Leadville Railroad and tours of the actual mines. Who could ask for anything more? Mike said, "Well, looks like we'll be done seeing Leadville by 2 tomorrow afternoon. What are we going to do after that?" I had planned to take in 1 attraction per day. I wanted to get a feel for how the miners lived a century ago. Mike said, "Hey, look, we're only 59 miles from Aspen. We can drive there tomorrow afternoon." "Whoa, Nellie," I said, "whose vacation pick is this anyway?" Leadville was really one of my favorite vacations. I have gladly endured years of teasing from Mike about the 4 days in Colorado that seemed like 4 years to him. "Well, aren't you lucky?" I say. "It's not everyone who gets their sense of time expanded, especially when they're on vacation." Carl Jung's original Innie and Outie. The pendulum of the mind oscillates between sense and nonsense, not between right and wrong. C.G. Jung. In the early 1900s, psychoanalyst Carl Jung was working with Sigmund Freud and Alfred Adler, 2 other pioneering psychoanalytic theorists, when he noticed something puzzling. When Freud and Adler discussed the same case histories of patients, they focused on very different information. They also had developed almost opposite theories. Jung thought they had both captured something valuable. Jung gave it some thought, guess which Jung was, an introvert or an extrovert, and developed his own theory. Jung thought Freud was extroverted because his personal orientation was outward toward the world of people, places, and things. Many of Freud's theories were developed in conjunction with extensive correspondence and discussions with numerous colleagues. Freud believed that the goal of psychological development was to find gratification in the world of external reality. Jung thought Adler was introverted, since his theory and focus were inward toward one's own thoughts and feelings. Adler's theories were based on the internal struggle to overcome the feelings of helplessness expressed in his term, inferiority complex. He saw people as creative artists shaping their own lives. Freud's theoretical differences with Adler and Jung ended in bitterness. The three parted company, and each went his own way. At that point, Freud began to use the concept of introversion as a negative, implying a turning inward away from the world, in his writings about narcissism. This shifted the evolution of the concept of introversion away from healthy and toward the unhealthy, a misconception that remains to this day. Jung continued to develop his theory, and he surmised that we are born with a temperament endowment that locates us somewhere on a continuum between very introverted and very extroverted. He believed that there was a physiological foundation for these dispositions. Science is now finding his intuition was right. He realized we could adapt best in the world if we could move easily on the continuum, introverting and extroverting when needed. However, he recognized that humans don't seem to work that way. We are oriented or pulled in one direction more than the other. He concluded that we all have a natural niche where we function best. Jung also thought that, apart from either extreme, any place on the continuum is healthy. Jung believed that it is harmful to push a child outside of the natural range of his or her temperament, thinking this would violate the individual's innate disposition. In fact, he thought this was the cause of some mental illness. However, he pointed out that the other aspects of the continuum are still available to us. Our ability to move on the continuum can improve with our awareness of the process. For example, you can learn to store up energy and thereby have a reserve to enable you to use your less natural side. Think about writing all day with your less dominant hand. You could do it, but you would use more exertion and concentration to focus. Jung thought this was what it was like to function outside your natural niche. You can do it, but it will consume extra energy without creating any new energy. What twins tell us about temperament? In her book, Entwined Lives, preeminent twins researcher Nancy Siegel, Ph.D., writes about the incredible findings during her years at the University of Minnesota Center for Twin and Adoption Research. Fascinating studies compared personality similarities in identical, same egg, and fraternal, different eggs, twins, raised apart and raised together. As 50 reunited twins passed through the center, the similarities were astounding. Twins reared apart showed an amazing array of specific shared traits, especially identical twins. One such set of twins loved to discuss their favorite subject, raising horses and dogs. Another pair of identicals were both volunteer firefighters, and both were known for their impatience with inferior cuisine. Another pair, who had never before met, drove up to the reunion in light blue Chevrolets. Still another pair used the same rare toothpaste from Sweden. As the center studied more reunited twins, it became apparent that their temperaments were more similar than expected. Dr. Siegel writes, "A surprise was that traditionalism, the endorsement of traditional family and moral values, did not show common family effects. In other words, living with someone does not lead to agreement on standards of conduct or parenting practices." Studies also showed that fraternal twins raised together are much less alike than identical twins that have been raised separately. These studies reveal what Jung was saying so long ago. We are born with an innate temperament. Dr. Siegel goes on to say, "The bottom line is that living together does not make people in a family alike, and that similarities are explained by shared genes. Are you an introvert? To see what is in front of one's nose requires a constant struggle. George Orwell. Here's the fun part. Are you a fish out of water? The IRS gives us taxpayers the choice of short forms and long forms for our tax returns, and I am giving you the same option. Take the quickie quiz that follows, or the longer self-assessment for introversion following that, whichever strikes your fancy. Or take them both and see what you come up with. Quickie quiz. Listen to the list of key qualities that follows. Which list feels more like you, or is more like you most of the time? Not every characteristic on a list will fit. Answer as you are, not as you would like to be. Go with your first impression. Qualities A. Like to be in the thick of things. Relish variety, bored with sameness. Know lots of people, consider them friends. Enjoy chit-chatting, even with strangers. Feel stoked after activity, eager for more. Speak or act without needing to think first. Are generally quite peppy. Tend to talk more than listen. Qualities B. Prefer to relax alone or with a few close friends. Consider only deep relationships as friends. Need rest after outside activities, even ones you enjoy. Often listen, but talk a lot about topics of importance to you. Appear calm, self-contained, and like to observe. Tend to think before you speak or act. Experience mind going blank in groups or under pressure. Don't like feeling rushed. Which list of qualities describes you best? If it's list A, you're extroverted. If it's B, you're introverted. You probably won't have all of the qualities on the list, but one list will fit better than the other. Since we all live in a culture biased toward extroversion, and your job and family demands may require you to function as an extrovert quite a bit, it may be difficult to decide which portrait seems more like you. If you are undecided, then ask yourself this question. Am I refreshed more often after quiet time, innie, or active time, outie? If you are still uncertain, take this longer self-assessment for introverts. Take the test for introversion on a day when you are feeling relaxed and not stressed out. Pick a cozy nook where you won't be interrupted. Consider each statement in terms of what is generally true or false for you, not how you wish you were or how you are some of the time. Don't analyze or think too deeply about each statement. Your first impression is usually the best. For an outside view of yourself, it can be enlightening to have a partner or friend answer for you. Compare your results with your friend's score. If the two tallies differ, talk about both of your views. Answer the following questions true or false, then add up your true answers and check the scoring I'll give you at the end of the list to see if you're an introvert, fall in the middle of the continuum, or are an extrovert. True or false? When I need to rest, I prefer to spend time alone or with one or two close people rather than with a group. When I work on projects, I like to have larger, uninterrupted time periods rather than smaller chunks. I sometimes rehearse things before speaking, occasionally writing notes for myself. In general, I like to listen more than I like to talk. People sometimes think I'm quiet, mysterious, aloof, or calm. I like to share special occasions with just one person or a few close friends, rather than have big celebrations. I usually need to think before I respond or speak. I tend to notice details many people don't see. If two people have just had a fight, I feel the tension in the air. If I say I will do something, I almost always do it. I feel anxious if I have a deadline or pressure to finish a project. I can zone out if too much is going on. I like to watch an activity for a while before I decide to join in. I form lasting relationships. I don't like to interrupt others. I don't like to be interrupted. When I take in lots of information, it takes me a while to sort it out. I don't like overstimulating environments. I can't imagine why folks want to go to horror movies or go on roller coasters. I sometimes have strong reactions to smells, tastes, foods, weather, noises, etc. I am creative and/or imaginative. I feel drained after social situations, even when I enjoy myself. I prefer to be introduced rather than to introduce others. I can become grouchy if I'm around people or activities too long. I often feel uncomfortable in new surroundings. I like people to come to my home, but I don't like them to stay too long. I often dread returning phone calls. I find my mind sometimes goes blank when I meet people or when I am asked to speak unexpectedly. I talk slowly or have gaps in my words, especially if I am tired or if I am trying to speak and think at once. I don't think of casual acquaintances as friends. I feel as if I can't show other people my work or ideas until they are fully formulated. Other people may surprise me by thinking I am smarter than I think I am. Add up the number of trues. Then listen to the following to see where you fall. 20 to 29 true. Pretty darn introverted. As a result, it is extremely important for you to understand how to keep your energy flowing and how your brain processes information. You relate to life through your ideas, impressions, hopes, and values. You are not at the mercy of your external environment. This audiobook can help you use your inner knowledge to create your own path. 10 to 19 true. Somewhere in the middle. Like being ambidextrous, you are both introverted and extroverted. You may feel torn between needing to be alone and wanting to be out and about. So it's very helpful to notice when and how you consistently feel more energized. You judge yourself by your own thoughts and feelings and by the standards of other people. This gives you a broad view, but at times you may get caught up in seeing both sides of a situation and not know where you stand. It is important to learn to assess your temperament so you can maintain your energy and balance. I will talk more about this in Chapter 2. 1 to 9 true. You are more extroverted. You judge yourself in the light of the values and reality of others. You work within the bounds of what exists to bring about change. As you reach midlife and your body slows down, you may surprise yourself by wanting to take a break from socializing or needing time to yourself and then not knowing what to do. You can develop techniques to help yourself remember what is best for you to do when you need solitude. To do this, you will have to balance your extroverting skills by learning more introverting skills. If you're still not sure if you're an innie or an outie, consider the following question. In a crisis, do you tend to feel shut down and somewhat detached and to respond in slow motion? Or do you tend to move your body immediately, take action without even thinking? During a stressful event, we revert to our basic hardwiring. If you tend to pull back, a hush falling over you like a fog, then you are more introverted. If you are more extroverted, you react by propelling yourself forward into action. There is value in each reaction. Innies and outies are both valuable.